Certainly don't want to cross him. No, Very successful coach, though. He can't argue with his approach to coaching.
No, he made the Octagon what it is, left it in great shape, and then left and came down here and is trying to revive South Carolina.
Bob Huggins guy.
Yeah.
He was an assistant for Huggins.
How about
many
that?
Years.
Well, there you go. 11:08 in the zone. Jim Harris from SportingLiveArkansas.com joining us. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
How are you?
Jim.
Very good. Get to hang out with some movers and shakers in Arkansas government and Scotty Thurman, no less. So pretty good day so far.
Oh, I'd say you have it real good.
Yesterday,
especially with Scotty part.
Yeah. Jim, I'm going to go off the board a little bit because I know we're going to talk about basketball here in a second. But yesterday had a chance to spend some time in Hot Springs and the Southwest Stakes. Tapiture coming through over strong mandate. Not strong enough, apparently, Southwest Stakes. So it was a big day. And, boy, great crowd yesterday. Spectacular day from a weather standpoint, too.
Yeah, after all the freeze, all the icy conditions, the lost days to Mother Nature, it's nice for the, a really big weekend like this and a Monday race to have this kind of great weather. I kind of wish I had been over there, but I had another commitment. But I'll make it over. I think this is a big year, good horses.
Mm-hmm.
Great horse yesterday that pulled away to win. And who knows, we may get us a Kentucky Derby candidate after all this season.
Yeah, may get a few of them, actually.
Oh, we'll have a candidate. Yeah, we'll have a few. I'm just maybe one.
One of the leading candidates.
Handle a mile and a quarter. Yeah.
No doubt. Well. And then the big thing is, can somebody hang in there for the mile and a half at the end of the run? So we'll see.
In the Belmont?
Yep.
Yeah.
That's always the tough part of it.
I'll tell you, the way horses, the way the breeding is and all that, it's just, it's hard. It's obviously been hard to produce the horse that, can handle what are three pretty distinct distances now. I mean, it's just, the mile and a quarter for the Kentucky Derby is, that's a pretty good stretch for a young horse. It always was. And then you felt like, coming back the next one with a slightly shorter race, it's funny how many Arkansas Derby winners have been successful in the Preakness as opposed to the Kentucky Derby. And then, of course, we've had a couple of success stories, that won the Arkansas Derby, that also won Belmont, which is grueling as all get out. And, there's only been a handful of secretariats affirmed. I guess affirmed is the last Triple Crown winner, isn't it?
I'll go with that.
Yeah, Seattle Slew.
I just know it all happened in the 70s. That's all I know.
There were a bunch of them, and then that never happened again. Yeah. It's weird.
Well, they're all, there's so much inbreeding in the business,
Whoa.
Well, it is. They're bred to be, there's a lot of connections. There's a lot of cousins. Pat.
Yes, there are a lot of
cousins, like in Boston.
Like, it's like a Bradley family reunion.
Like the old neighborhood.
Oh, no doubt.
Like the old neighborhood,
They just, they don't live in brownstones, but they're all close together. It's all good. They live in
barns. Yeah, we used to have a lot of Triple Crown winners in the old Bradley days. Not anymore.
And I'll tell you what, Justin, if you could ever get Andrew Beyer on, he'd be a great interview if you ever get this guy.
Where is he based?
I think he's in Baltimore now.
The man responsible for the Beyer speed figures?
Yeah.
It would be interesting.
He's still a pretty much a genius in my book, and his book too, I think.
Yeah.
He did calculate the Beyer speed figures. Of course, the guy who did the speed figures out of this area for so many years is Randy Moss. He was an early proponent of that and got in gear with Beyer and all that and provided the comparisons. It's all based a lot on the track they're running. You got to know what speed the track could offer to get those kind of numbers. And then of course it's all a complicated process that it's just another thing for punters, as we call them, I guess, to look at in the form and try to make the call. And then, of course,
I didn't get it right. No, I sure didn't yesterday. But it was fun, and I took my kids yesterday. It was the first time they'd been.
I bet that was wonderful.
The fun thing about taking your kids to Oaklawn is you discover foods you didn't know they sold. Because the kids are always looking. They're all about. They're not gambling, you know. At least, hopefully not. So they have a chance to. They can still pick which horse they like the best, but they're always looking for something new to eat. So it's basically a constant smorgasbord for the kids. So I saw some things that I didn't know they had. So that was kind of fun.
It used to be you couldn't take anybody under 16 years ago. Back when I was a kid, you couldn't go to your 16.
I thought you had to be 21 to gamble too. I guess you only have to be 18. It's been so long since I was in the mix on that.
I don't think they card you though. I mean, they'd have to look at you and go, "You don't look 21."
Well, they ID. I think. I don't know. I haven't been ID'd in so long. I don't know. But anyway,
I don't know either.
Let me shift gears. Figuring out the buyer speed figure is difficult. Figuring out the opponent's win percentage and your difficulty of schedule when it comes to college football, not so difficult. Arkansas getting no favors yet again this year. Arkansas, the toughest schedule in the SEC for 2014 based on last year's win percentage. Now, Arkansas not exactly playing the best of non-conference opponents by win percentage, but nowhere near the worst. Arkansas 1, Tennessee 2, Texas A&M 3. Those are the only three schools who are playing teams that are a combined 100 wins or more from last season. Kentucky, South Carolina, Auburn. Then the bottom half, you get Georgia, Ole Miss, Florida, Missouri. These are in order, by the way. And your bottom four easiest schedules, LSU, Mississippi State, Vanderbilt. And the easiest schedule in 2014 in the SEC goes to none other than Alabama.
Of course.
Alabama has the easiest schedule. In fact, Alabama is the only team in the SEC this year that will be playing teams that were combined under 500 last season, and their non-conference opponents combined for a paltry 13-35 record for a 271 average, by far the worst non-conference schedule of anybody by the record.
Sure, no surprise.
And you'll hear not one word about this once the season begins.
Not even close.
Okay. It's supposed to be random. All the scheduling's supposed to be random. I mean, what year?
Random, my patoot!
Like they changed last year and you ended up with Florida on Arkansas schedule. This year it's Georgia. It'll continue to rotate through. Supposed to be random, but... I don't know. Look at basketball. I think Arkansas may have as tough a basketball schedule as anybody in the SEC. If you look at who's atop the standings and who Arkansas had to play twice or travel to play once.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at that schedule, I think Arkansas clearly, we'll add it up. I'll come up with the stats and I'll send it back to you. But I think that it's true that, I mean, when you throw in a one home game against Florida, I mean, it might offset a road trip to Vanderbilt. But you got at Tennessee, you got two games with Kentucky, two games with Missouri, two games with Georgia. I mean, you got all these teams that are at the top, and Arkansas is probably playing them a lot more than they are South Carolina, Auburn.
Yeah, the bigger issue for me, Jim, is you're not able to pick up some relatively easy by SEC standards this year road wins.
Yeah.
At South Carolina would have been better than having South Carolina at home. At Auburn would have been better than having Auburn at home. If you're only going to play them once,
we talk about basketball. Right.
Yeah, I'd rather try to play at those places than get them at home.
That's assuming Arkansas could do it. You know, last year they just completely didn't show at South Carolina.
But they did smash Auburn.
They still have some great opportunities though. If you look at how the schedule
Alabama,
sets up, you can. Those are winnable games, winnable road games.
All of them.
And if you look at what is the committee like, or we assume that they like in the past, is a team that's on a hot streak, on a winning streak
going into postseason
play.
Tournament. That's right, and they could win 7 of 8, probably. I don't think they're going to win at Kentucky, although that's not a given for Kentucky. I mean, I think Arkansas kind of gives them the kind of trouble that trouble team right now. But Arkansas could do exactly what you're saying, Pat, and they could get a decent seeding in the tournament and in the SEC tournament, pick up a game or two there. You never know. And if you're winning, 9 of 11?
Yeah.
That's going to look pretty good.
Well, let's call it what it is. I don't think any three of us would say that there's any team out there other than Florida that the Hawks can't beat
in the SEC
in a neutral floor situation.
Couldn't agree more.
You know, so.
There are great teams in America this year, I believe, and there are some very good teams in America, and I don't think Kentucky falls into either one of those categories, but they're at the top of the good teams.
Yeah, yeah.
I think absolutely Arkansas can win that game. I don't expect them to necessarily.
I think Arkansas could beat Florida on a neutral court.
Could.
Somebody's going to accuse me of always bringing the officials into it, but I thought it was kind of a neutral court at Bud Walton the way.
Yeah, but their leading scorer didn't play, and Wobekin wasn't healthy.
That's
Florida team is playing right now, I don't know that I'd pick anybody to beat them anywhere except for maybe
on the road. They're probably playing a lot better now than they were in January, or early January.
And so is Arkansas, thank God.
Yeah, they are.
At the right time.
I mean, they're playing better today than they were 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, they didn't have two of their players stand at Baton Rouge, but also they just didn't eat the guys they brought down there, for whatever reason, seemed like they'd been out at the Chimes all night or something, you know, or some of those clubs down not too far from the
When I look at that, though, Jim, that was a key moment in this season for Coach Anderson to sit those two guys who we've seen what they can do. I think there's obviously a little bit of inconsistency. But to sit those two guys going to LSU, and we know what the situation was, just that right there, I think, for the whole team and for those guys was a turning moment to get their attention, to let them know or remind them it's not all about you guys. We will go there not with a full roster, just to make sure that you get what I'm trying to send the message. This is a team, and the reason why I think this team is better than last year's team is the depth that they have. And if he can get them to buy into their role and understand what he wants from them, they're going to be better players for it, and they're going to be a better team. And I think that's we're going to look back at it, and even though we lost at LSU, it's going to be sort of a pivotal moment in the season. You like that pivotal word, don't you?
Pivotal.
I think you hit it right on the head. I can't say it any better.
Go ahead, try.
I'm sure you can. You're a scribe.
Go ahead and try. I think it continues. I mean, there's some more pivotal moments ahead, too. But I agree, that was a turning point to get two players' attention. And I think he got them, because you can see what Alondis Harris has been able to do a little bit. He still wants to get out there every now and then. And once in a while, he'll hit a three. But, you know, he wants to get out every now and then and still shoot a 18-footer. You know, Corey Williams still wants to shoot that 16-footer. Pat, tell him to just camp by the
But, but I will say, I've seen Alondis Harris look at it a couple times and think, nope, I'm not going to do that. You could see it.
He
you could see it going
now,
on in his mind. I'm not going to shoot this.
Yeah.
Yep. So
well,
that's good.
Florida, what impresses me so much is, and down the stretch at Kentucky, I mean, if y'all watched that game, I don't know if you did, but so many times, and especially Scotty Wilbekin, they had open shots early in the clock, and I see teams like Arkansas go, oh, I got an open shot, let me shoot it. And, I mean, it's like Coach Anderson said last year when he was trying to get a couple of their attention. He said, there's a reason why some of you guys have wide open shots.
Yeah.
You know, because you're shooting about 15%, and they're going to let you shoot them. But the way that the way that Florida didn't just take the first long-range opportunity, you know, it's like penetrating, it's getting inside, getting a high percentage shot, probably getting fouled, as Scotty Wilbekin is pretty amazing getting fouled. And I think they're getting, I still believe there's a little bit of the Stripes know who the best team in the league is. They got some breaks at Rupp Arena that I haven't seen a lot of teams get. Down the stretch. I mean, fouls were called on Kentucky. Fouls weren't called on a couple plays against Florida when Kentucky was on offense. And I'm as objective on this as I can be. I could care less for either team. It's just how I saw the game. Mm-hmm. I'm not, like, looking at it from all Arkansas eyes. Oh, they missed all those calls, Mr. Roosevelt. It's not that.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw it from what I thought. I was seeing that, you know, there are drives, they call a foul on Kentucky against Scotty driving where, I mean, he's also pushing off. I mean, you know, but it's like, oh, well, let's get the Kentucky guy for a crucial two-shot foul at that point. I mean, that's a basket they're giving to him. Are you there?
Yes, sir. Just listen. No, just listen.
I mean, do you see what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
absolutely. That's just the game. I mean, the game of basketball is so hard to ref. I mean, it's just... It's hard to call anyway, but I think that officials are human too.
Yeah.
they also know who's leading the league. I mean, you know, they know what's at stake. They know all that stuff. I just see it happen in the SEC. I see it happen other places too. But I've seen like Cincinnati go into Louisville and you know, not get homered. I mean, get great calls and was called fairly in that league. And then I've seen other places where other games. I've watched a lot of college basketball.
I've watched more college basketball. Yeah, I've watched more college basketball this year than I probably ever have in my life. And I don't know why. Yeah. It just worked out that way.
I didn't stick with the Baylor game last night, but I've seen a lot of games, and it seems to me when you look at the SEC, you still get some, I don't know, it isn't home court favoritism. It just seems to be the team. I mean, it just seems like the calls, that's just, Arkansas will not get those kind of calls in Rupp Arena that Florida did. I just know they won't.
Yeah.
Well, I think when you do it over and over and you're in Florida, that's... any referee will give him the benefit of the doubt. There's no, and when a guy like Wilbekin, who's been doing it for, what, 4 years,
right,
his fourth year now?
They're smart enough to get those calls. I mean, he's smart enough to drive and create contact and get it and get the foul call. I mean, Todd Day was great at doing that for the Razorbacks back in the day. I mean, he was great at knowing where and how to get the contact and go to the free throw line. I mean, good players do that.
Mm-hmm.
I think Pat Bradley probably managed that once in a while, didn't you?
Every once in a while, I was able to trick somebody.
Hey, guys, I want to go through a quick few numbers here if I can, and I can.
It's your show.
I would make a strong argument that Bobby Portis is the freshman of the year in the SEC. And I know that this kid from Kentucky came in as the preseason player of the year, but when you look at the numbers and the ways that he's impacting basketball games, I can make an argument that Portis is the freshman of the year. He's fifth in the league in blocked shots, okay? He's also seventh in the league in steals. He's currently 21st in the league in scoring at 13.7, and he's 7.2 in as far as rebounds per game. That's seventh best in the league. The guy is doing so many things well. And then you look at Kai Madden, who could make an argument probably for sure second team, I would think, if not maybe one of the final spots on the first team. He's 40% from three. That's fifth best in the league. He is fifth in the league in free throw percentage at 85%, or just shy of it. And then he's 11th in the league in scoring. He is he's playing so well, too, and it's fun to see that as well. But those two guys have really done a good job. Some numbers from a team standpoint, and this is just – I finally am now starting to look at conference-only stats,
mm-hmm.
not overall stats. Arkansas actually fares pretty well in some things. Three-point field goals made, second in the league at 7.2, and they've shot a substantial number fewer than the number one team in that category, which is Ole Miss. Arkansas is dead last in rebounding margin, which doesn't shock anybody. I do want to point that out, though. And they're number one in steals as a team at over 8 a game, the only team in the conference that's over 8 a game, and they're number one in assist-to-turnover ratio. So they are doing a lot of things well, and there are a couple of individuals who I thought should be highlighted. I don't think it shocks anybody. The thing that I looked at, though, with Bobby is that, you know, he's a top 15 guy in scoring. He's a top guy in rebounding. He's a top guy in steals. He's a top guy in blocks. I mean, he's doing so many different things. I think he's 10th in the league in offensive rebounds. He's doing so many things well. I mean, and he really is ahead of Randall in almost everything except for scoring. I could make, or not scoring, but rebounding.
I can make an argument.
It almost seems like that would be, at least in SEC play, his weakness.
Is
on the boards. He got a lot more boards in December than I thought he got in the first six games of the conference, it seemed like, anyway. I mean, it just seemed that way. I think he's starting to turn it on again now and rise, you know, carry his game up to another level. And here in these next six games, he could make a case for being freshman of the year. I don't think he is. I think he's got to be in the talk, but I would guess there's still going to be. It's all been about Randall, so it probably is going to be him.
Well,
no,
because
he's
an overhyped guy on the most overhyped team, and so it's understandable, and that's the way it goes. But when you look at the actual performance on the court, and look, the kid is gifted, and you look at him, and he stands out among – he's a man among men, no doubt about it. But I would say that contribution-wise and as far as being a well-rounded player, Portis has contributed more and played a bigger role.
You're going to see a lot of Portis getting better. That's one thing about this kid. If you know, we've seen a lot of him because he was here at Hall, and you know, it's just – you've seen his game. But he's getting better every practice in every game. And this being the second half of the season,
yeah.
I mean, after these next, what, they got five, six games left. Going into the SEC tournament.
And they're playing five teams that he could really put up some gaudy numbers, and there's no reason to believe he couldn't
score. And he's not forcing it.
Against Kentucky, that's it.
That's the great thing that I like about him.
The thing that was awesome was that he goes 35, and the next game he barely scores at all, but really helps his team in a variety of other ways.
Yes, he does.
Something that ought to be starting to be obvious to everybody, to all the fans especially, and hopefully to get the crazier fans who are always about, well, we made a mistake, you know, with the coach and hire we made again. I mean, that just gets redundant and ridiculous out of this fan base. I mean, I think Mike is showing, the staff is showing, look at nearly everybody down the lineup is markedly improved as the season's gone on. And, you know, I can name, you know, at least eight guys who are significantly improved over last year. And I can throw out a couple of guys and say, yeah, they never got there, or they reached their peak or whatever. But Portis has improved. He got Alondis Harris's attention. He's playing better now. Look at Qualls from one year to the next. Down the list, Ty Madden probably made the most improvement of any Razorback I can think of from what he did in his first 2 years to his junior year. I can't think of a guy who's made this big a jump. Folks, this is it's a lot on the player, as I know Pat will tell you. Isn't that true? But it's also the coaching.
Yeah,
and I've really gotten tired of hearing the anti-coaching.
Jim, there's a reason why I enjoy going up to the game as early as I can, and I got a chance on Saturday to talk to one of the players. For a while, actually, before the game, and he went through, and I knew this already, and this is kind of just something that, to hammer your point home, he told me, went out of his way to tell me how different it was when Coach Anderson took the job, and he was there when he took the job, the things that these student-athletes were engaging in were, it would shock you. And now to where they are today, to where Coach A has cleaned up virtually all of that, to the point where now guys are getting suspended for the smallest things. You know, Qualls and Harris, it's not like they weren't hanging out all night smoking weed or anything like that. So it just goes to show you how far they've come from a character standpoint to what he's trying to do there. And I've always known Coach A is a bottom line, strong backbone type guy. The buck always stops with him. And he's going to show up every day and work harder than anybody. So I feel good, but I'm biased. You know how I am, guys. By the way, I was at his house on Saturday.
Who's?
Oh, my God. What a mansion he's got.
Who's that?
Coach A.
Yeah?
Brother.
This just in. College basketball coaches are not poorly paid. Let me get Corndog in quickly, and we'll let you go, Jim. Go ahead, Corndog.
Hey, man. I just wanted y'all's opinion on, I think everybody knows, you know, they see certain characteristics of this team and have, you know, things that they would like to see. But I want to know what y'all's opinions are on what we can expect from this team next and what we're missing, as far as, like, inside play or something like that. You know, what's our next step? What are we going to develop into and can look forward to see next year?
Corndog, thanks.
Well, you're missing that John Jackson-type point guard or somebody close to it. Doesn't have to be John Jackson, who plays about 6'5", even though he's 5'11", I guess. I think Beard will add a lot to the team, Anton Beard. I still think they need to find another point guard this spring from junior college. They're losing four guards. But they'll have a shooting guard named Nick Babb coming in from Dallas that will help too. Certainly will spell Kai a little bit. K-Y. I think he'll be able to spell that. sorry, bad joke.
Yeah, that's I loved it, Jim.
But And then they need more beef. And I understand that after a couple of somewhat lackluster high school years, everybody says Trey Thompson seems to have the fire again and is looking really strong for Forest City. Now, Forest City's conference is not that strong, but I'm sure he'll have a chance to, during the off season, get stronger. And, you know, when he goes up to Fayetteville, and that 6'8", 6'9" size that he brings up there will give him some more, inside half to try to reduce that rebound deficit margin they face right now. And it's basically because they play with a lot of 6'5 guard or 6'5 guys.
Speaking of inside guys, have we heard anything on
Kingsley?
Kingsley, thank you.
Kingsley. He's been in the whirlpool, every day. That's basically
that's a way to get your game right.
All I'm hearing is that he could be ready to go, but I mean, it's just a. I think it's a hip injury, a hip pointer.
Hip hop, hip to the hip.
Let's get Mike in here. Go ahead, Mike.
Morning, gentlemen. Listening to Bobby Knight on the Missouri game, you could tell he was pro-Missouri, but he kept talking about when Missouri dropped to the basket, we needed to step out from under the basket. Could Anderson not see this? And my other question is, do they not call hooking anymore?
No, they don't, because I saw it happen all the time this weekend. Good point. Mike, that's a great call. And there was a play where a kid from Missouri – hooked the Arkansas kid, went up for a basket, got the bucket, and drew a foul when he had hooked the Arkansas defender.
Yeah, I remember that play.
Thanks for the call. Yeah, that's annoying. I don't know why they don't call that anymore. It's annoying.
Well, it's kind of funny. They were supposed to call the offensive player for the push as much as they were going to call the hand check. And apparently the hand check got the attention.
Yeah, the hook got lost in the shuffle, apparently.
The hook got lost in the shuffle, the push-off. I mean, you're seeing a lot of push-off. I mean, I go back to Scotty Wilbekin. He's a master at the hook and the push. He's a good player. I mean, I just wish they'd call palming and stuff a little bit more. They had emphasized that in November and then just kind of gave that away. And I watched a lot of games this weekend where – I mean, you know, the guard just basically is holding the ball in his hand at the top of his dribble. You know, I don't know. They need to take more street out of the game is how I look at it, because it's a lot of stuff that's carried from the asphalt.
Carried? No pun intended?
Yeah, carried. And I think they're sort of working on it a little bit with the bumping and the hand checking, but there's so many more. And then also the other thing is that in the SEC anyway, it's how much rough play is still going on underneath on rebounds. In Missouri was clubbing us.
I would say Arkansas fans would argue not enough.
I mean there's a lot of, certainly you would call it body checks and pushes and hooks underneath on rebounds that just get totally ignored. I think they need to start charging some of these officials admission, you know, if they're going to just stand there.
That's good. I like that.
Jim, we got to take
been
off.
Great.
Yeah, appreciate the time.
Great.
Yeah, good stuff.
See you tonight,
we didn't
Jim.
Even get to everything. I wanted to talk about the coaches complaining about not having an opportunity to substitute on defense, even though the statistical information would not back up our argument.
It isn't even voted on. It's going to be voted on in 2 weeks, so let's talk about it then, because it still may not pass. So we'll see where it goes.
Very good. All right. Appreciate it. Thanks, man. Hazelwood, Bill, hang on. We'll get to you guys out of the break. It is 11:35.